This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Alongside Dave Minuk, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gentlemen, a Winnipeg Jets victory last night, their first Friday night home game of the year. We know how few and far between the weekend games have been on home ice. The Jets got it off to a good start last night, or the homestand off to a good start. I guess it's the second game of the homestand now that I really think about it.
Getting this off to a great start here.
No, I'm really struggling there. That New Jersey game was so dull, I tried to delete it from my mind. That was one of the worst hockey games. It was a better contest last night. Canucks opened the scoring, then the Jets with four unanswered goals to take the 4-1 lead. But, of course, Connor Hellebuck, from my perspective, the story of the game, numerous save after save, story of the season, big save after big save until Kyle Connor was able to give the Jets that two-goal cushion with his breakaway, which came really right off the faceoff after he... Hellebuck made that great save off Bo Horvat that we played off the start of the show.
Yeah, Drew, just to go back to, good morning, first of all, boys, but just to go back to that Devils game on Tuesday night, like, it was like both teams were trying to do the mannequin challenge out there. Like, it was just a horrible game overall. It's not like one team was necessarily that much better, and the good thing was the Jets got the point, but man, that reminded you of almost the dead puck era, right, Dave? So
it was unwatchable, that hockey game. The Tuesday night game was... Two teams, I think, before the puck dropped, they just decided to say, okay, let's just not do anything. We're going to play for overtime. Both of us will take 1 point, and we'll play for overtime to see who gets the second point.
I don't know
point.
If I agree with that, but I will tell you that for the last 10 minutes, yeah, there was no question in my mind that both teams were playing to get that extra point.
Well, and over the course of an 82-game season, guys, every team is going to have, you know, one or two or three games, hopefully that's it, that are going to be boring, right? You can't have 82 Picassos, right, as Claude Noel used to say. But, you know, heading into this game last night, guys, you almost didn't really know what to expect, right? Because we know that the Canucks were coming off of that loss the previous night on Thursday night, right? So we knew that the Canucks were probably going to be hungry, but also maybe a little bit tired coming over from Chicago, right? But with everything that was going around, swirling around the Jets, right, with the injuries and all of the
noise,
breaking news. Noise is a good word.
Yeah, the noise that's been around this team and this organization, right, the entirety of the season.
Right, and you know, Ville Heinola is assigned back to Finland, right? So there was just, it was one thing after the other this week, and I thought that the Jets did a really good job of really putting that behind them and just focusing on the game, because, you know, we talk about the Tuesday game, and obviously this was a much better effort. And, you know, Blake Wheeler, the big story, moving to center. We haven't seen that since a couple of years ago when Mark Scheifele went down, right, guys? So Blake Wheeler did a really good job centering that second line. You know, Kyle Connor's goal was just a highlight reel goal. Just, it was pure speed. And that, to me, was the biggest difference between this game and last game. I mean, Blake Wheeler looked fast. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers and Kyle Connor always look fast. They looked fast against the Devils.
Nikolai Ehlers looked fast as he slammed into the boards hard after Tyler Myers tripped him. Was that in the first period, last night? I mean, I was shocked to see Ehlers come back. He went hard into the boards, and you wonder how he's feeling this morning. Sometimes it takes, you know, a few hours, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours after the incident to actually see the ramifications of the hit into the board and the whiplash effect and everything else.
It's interesting because I thought to myself when I saw that in the first, I thought to myself, oh, this is just par for the course with this team.
Sure.
I
mean,
just,
another injury.
You know, another injury, and especially of someone who's as critical as Nikolai Ehlers has been all season long. But, you know, you saw him come back, and of course Jets fans breathed a sigh of relief when that happened. But to your point, Drew, he was, if you watched the game, like, he was on the bench, he was stretching it out. Uh-huh. And so to your point about him feeling it today, Jets are scheduled to practice today at 12 noon. So we'll see if he takes the practice. Or if
I think it's 11:30 now.
Is it 11:30?
Yeah, they moved it up 30 minutes.
Okay. So you've got the Jets practicing at 11:30, but the point is that they're going to, you know, we're going to see if Nikolai Ehlers, actually, it's very kind of them to do that, to allow us to still be able to be on the air so we can discuss it on the show.
Very considerate of the organization to throw us a bone like that. Yeah, but exactly to your point, I think what you're saying is don't be surprised if Nikolai Ehlers maybe isn't on the ice during practice today. Give him a day off after slamming into the boards. But of course, we'll know more about that in the later stages of this morning's program. But I go back to last night's game, and the Canucks opened the scoring on that defensive breakdown, which is, I think, the polite way of saying leaving JT Miller all alone behind your defense in your own zone. That was not textbook defense by the Winnipeg Jets in that instance. The Canucks open the scoring, and then the Jets respond with the new look power play. Jack Roslovic with a great individual effort, you know, cutting into the dangerous part of the ice, collecting his own rebound.
Had Wheeler as a option.
Wheeler is an option, exactly. You know, so he looks off Wheeler there and then deposits it past Thatcher Demko to tie the game at one. And then Mark Scheifele a couple minutes later, 5 minutes later to be exact, off the Kyle Connor. Again, Kyle Connor was so noticeable last night. Mm-hmm. And that shot by Connor, which led to the Scheifele rebound. I mean, that's a deliberate shot by Kyle Connor there. He shoots it off the far pad of mm-hmm. Demko, knowing that the rebound is going to be available, and Scheifele in tight with those good hands is able to scoop up the loose puck and deposit it, and it's a 2-1 lead for the Jets. So they're feeling good after giving up that opening goal to the Canucks, and then boy, Connor Hellebuck stood on his head and really was the backbone for the Jets to be able to then take that 3-1 lead on the Kyle Connor breakaway we spoke about.
I think what you like most about this game is that the top six looked like the top six that you're used to seeing from the Jets, even though it was a different permutation of the top six.
In terms of impact.
Right. And, yeah. You know, Mark Scheifele specifically, right? Like, he's been having trouble scoring goals. We mm-hmm. know that, you know, Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler have also been having trouble scoring goals. And, you know, you mentioned the power play, and I still think you have to have Patrick Laine on the first power play unit, even though I did like the look, because you could argue that Nikolaj Ehlers deserves to be on that top power play unit most nights, right? Because he is arguably the Jets' most skilled player. So, you know, Andrew Kopp deserves to be there, but I still think, you know, going forward, guys, when you have that shot, that Laine shot, you got to have him out there on the first power play unit. So I did like the look, and, you know, Neil Pionk, he should probably be, I think, on that second power play unit with Morrissey on the first power play unit. But I realize it gets into that conversation, like we've talked about, right shot versus left shot, right? But, you know, Jack Roslovic, we've talked about him the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's a guy that probably has more to prove than any other forward on the Jets. When you talk about his usage last year and the opportunity he's getting this year, right? So obviously you don't want to see Brian Little go down like he did against the Devils, but, you know, I thought Jack Roslovic has really stepped up his game, not just the last game, the last couple games, but really I would say the last, you know, couple weeks, five or six games. And I think that's a really promising sign, guys, because, you know, we haven't seen a lot of central teams yet this year. You've got two huge games coming up against teams that you're going to be battling with all year long. I mean, Dallas and Colorado. I mean, in addition to the whole, aside from Minnesota, everybody's in it. Chicago maybe is starting to fall off a little bit. Uh-huh. But when you're talking about the other five teams in this division, I mean, these are the teams that you're going to go to war with the whole year. And you've got Dallas, what, four times in the next month?
You have Dallas a lot in the next month, certainly. I mean, between Nashville, who's in second place right now with 20 points, and Dallas, who's, you know, just behind the Jets in fifth place with 17 points, it is a bit of a logjam. Only St. Louis has really been off to a very good start in the Central Division, and Chicago and Minnesota, to your point, Ezzy, have struggled. So, you know, the Nashville, the Colorado, the Winnipeg, the Dallas, none of those teams are really playing fantastic hockey. But, you know, to your point, division matchups are so important, and this is why tomorrow afternoon against the Stars, so important. Tuesday night against the Avalanche, an Avalanche team that absolutely blew out the Nashville Predators earlier this week. What did they get? Eight unanswered goals in that game?
Eight unanswered goals, and that's without Rantanen, and that's without Landeskog and McKinnon.
Yeah, he left the game early.
Right?
I know. I said Avalanche...
And Grubauer also, I think, is injured.
Well, I said the Avalanche are cheat mode right now, and, you know, what they did to Nashville. I mean, that was a close game, and then they absolutely just came out of nowhere and just swarm after swarm after swarm, you know, took over that game against the Predators a couple nights ago. So the Jets need to take, you know, this Vancouver Canucks team, by the way, is also a team that's been playing some pretty good hockey, at least to start the year.
Not against the Jets, though.
Oh, what is that? Eight in a row?
Nine
in a row they've now lost against the Winnipeg Jets. Yeah. But this isn't a Canucks team.
If Mark Scheifele scores, you might want to go out and make a bet. I think the Jets are 6-0-0 when Scheifele scores against Vancouver.
Well, it would be good to know that before the game started. Yeah. So if you knew he was going to score, then you can go make that bet with a little more confidence.
Can we talk about that empty net goal for a second when Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry?
It's something we're talking about, for sure. Absolutely.
It was hilarious just because Lowry obviously could have put it in, and then it was almost like they were trying to see how many times they could give it back and forth. Just stuff like that is like, I think that's something we talked about last year when the Jets were maybe not having fun on some nights, and you can tell that with everything going on, we've talked about it. I mean, there's the Buff kind of cloud hanging over this team, but, you know, the Brian Little scary injury from Tuesday night, all of the players that have gone down recently, Mark Letestu, Gabriel Bork, I mean, there have been just... it's been one thing after another, and I think you're starting to see a Jets team that's starting to almost rally around each other and starting to have a little bit more fun out there. So I think you like to see that at the end of the game.
I think that was a real good sign of sportsmanship, to be honest with you. And I thought that, these guys are all aware of how the other guy is doing. Mm-hmm. Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry obviously have a very good relationship there. You know, you can see the chemistry is on.
They've been line mates for the last, 5 years, basically?
Yeah, so these guys have that. And, Kopp has to be aware of the fact that Adam Lowry coming into that game didn't have a point in a game yet this season.
It's remarkable.
And it is remarkable. I mean, it's also a testament to what Adam Lowry was kind of forced to be, who he was kind of put on the line with mm-hmm. early in the season. There wouldn't really be a high expectation of producing points. But the fact is, I do think that could go a long way, to be honest with you. I mean, sometimes people say, oh, that's nothing. But I think that's one of those moments that you see that good sportsmanship. You see those guys wanting to see another guy have success. And you could see it. Like our photographer, Colby Spence, captured the image. He happened to be in the camera hole right beside the Canucks goal. So he got in tight. And you could just see kind of the camaraderie in the photo after that. It was evident how appreciative of that Adam Lowry was that Kopp gave it back to him. And you could see it. And again, like I said, that's a real thing of goodwill. The players see it. And I think, it goes a long way on that bench.
Do you think Kopp on the bench was saying to Lowry, like, you have no goals yet this year. You should put that one in.
They are, obviously you wonder how much longer they were going to keep passing it back and forth. And, for anyone who missed it, it was a 2-on-0 into an empty net, mm-hmm. Towards the end of the game. And there were no Canucks in sight for some strange reason. I'm not sure what happened.
Well, they blew a tire.
Yeah, but I mean, they were literally. The Jets had two guys at the goal line just mm-hmm. passing the puck nice back and forth like hot potato.
I actually thought Matthew Perreault played well. I thought, on the going back to the, I think it was the second period on the power play. It was just before Jack Roslovic scored that Perreault caused it forced like. He's so tenacious. And you saw him get in on the forecheck and he got the puck and they didn't score. The Canucks actually cleared the zone, but he just creates a lot of, good things for this Winnipeg Jets team. And sometimes he doesn't get rewarded for it in the sense of a point. And going back to the power play, I mean, I have to say, the idea, they were dominant. Like they controlled in that first one, not the one they scored, not the Jack Roslovic one, the first penalty.
There was two penalties back to back, and to the first penalty, the Jets controlled the play
for the entire
2 minutes.
So much so that the unit couldn't get off. Like they had such control of the puck mm-hmm. that obviously they didn't score, which obviously is your ultimate goal. But the reality was they had perfect control, so much so that they literally couldn't get off because they were trying to create opportunities. And I just thought it was a testament to the fact that they were playing well, they were firing the puck quickly. I mean, that was the one thing we were talking about last week's show or the week before, was the Jets seemed to be slow with their decision making.
Tentative.
And too calculated. And I thought this time it was a much better indicator that they were moving fast and they were thinking fast. So again, I thought it was a good game overall. And once again, and we glossed over it a little bit, but Connor Hellebuyck continues to be fantastic for this Jets team.
Well, that's just it. I mean, if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck last night and almost in every game for the Jets this year, where would this team be? He's up now to a .933 save percentage.
And his goal saves above average is either one or two in the league right now.
And we'll talk about, you have Sean Tierney coming up at the top of the next hour. We can talk about, Connor Hellebuyck's performance, mm-hmm. As it looks when the advanced stats look at it and the advanced analytics and really show how dominant he's been for the Winnipeg Jets and where this team would be if Connor Hellebuyck was playing like he did last year, where he was sort of average, as opposed to we're seeing the Connor Hellebuyck of almost 2 years ago, where he's been a dominant force in net for the Winnipeg Jets.
Connor Vesnabuck.
There you go. When we come back, we're going to discuss Blake Wheeler, Winnipeg Jets' new second-line center. Why was now the right time to move Wheeler to the second-line center spot when they didn't earlier in the year when Brian Little was out? Talk about Wheeler as a center. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
I sent him a text yesterday. It was an off day for the players. I said, this is a direction I'd like to consider. I had some line combinations. His answer was yes. I'd love to. And then we talked about it a little bit more. But this is where I wanted to start because I've seen pieces of this together already. So no, he was all for it.
Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about the decision to move Blake Wheeler to second line center and what the captain's reaction to the request was. I think admittedly it would have been more entertaining if he'd said no, but you know, all things considered, I guess that's probably not best for the team. So Blake Wheeler, now the Winnipeg Jets second line center, had a good performance last night in that role. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated and has been serving quality home style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. So Blake Wheeler, as I mentioned, second line center last night for the Winnipeg Jets, played well. You know, his line, had a very good Corsi four. I think upwards of 60% Corsi four in that position. Obviously, with the Ehlers being flanked by Ehlers and Roslovic last night. So why now? Why is this the time for Wheeler to move to second line center with Little injured, as opposed to at the beginning of the year when Little missed so many games to start the season, where Wheeler played on the wing? Do you agree with the decision? And do you think that this is the right time for this move to have occurred?
And Drew, you know one of the reasons why. It's because Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele have been struggling. Patrick Laine has been struggling to score goals. So it's pretty clear one of the reasons is because the Jets at 5-on-5 are struggling offensively. I think we all agree with that, right?
I would agree, yeah.
Right? So, and we've seen this a couple of years ago. We mentioned it last segment. I mean, we saw it with Mark Scheifele going down. I think it was against the Oilers. It was in late December. I remember that because I was in California for my honeymoon. No big deal. But when we're talking about Blake Wheeler, he's an exceptional player that can move to center, and you don't really notice a lot of growing pains, right? And I don't think you're going to see this long term. I really don't. And the reason for that is Blake Wheeler's a top 20, maybe even top 10 right winger in the NHL. But for the time being, I mean, guys, the Jets are kind of steadying the ship right now. They're just trying to tread water. And I was telling Dave off air yesterday, when you're talking about, you know, the schedule coming up, and I mean, the Jets have some tough games coming up on the road, and not to mention Dallas and Colorado coming up in the next, you know, 3 or 4 days, right? So, I mean, I have no problem with the move, because when Wheeler did this 2 years ago, he had success, right? And I think when you're looking at the Jets as a whole right now, we know that defensively they're a bit of a mess, and that has a lot to do with some of the turnover, right, in the offseason, but also the injuries that they've had. And it's good to see Nathan Beaulieu back, and I expect Sammy Niku to be back up with the Jets sooner rather than later. I don't know if that's going to happen necessarily, you know, for the next game, but I would be surprised if, you know, Niku's in the AHL 3 weeks from now. I really do think he'll be back up with the Jets soon, so that's going to help, because I think he can be a top four defenseman for this team. But, you know, getting back to Wheeler, I'm digressing a little bit here, guys, but I mean, you look at the combinations, and obviously the big news is that Wheeler's moving to center, but, you know, Wheeler has played with Ehlers many times over the years. Mark Scheifele has played with Kyle Connor many times over the years, and I really like that Connor Scheifele line. You know, you mentioned, you know, the Corsi for the Wheeler line, Roslovic. You look at those combinations, and it's not like anybody seems out of place. I mean, we know Roslovic can be very effective on the wing. I mean, Maurice likes to use Roslovic more on the wing, right, Dave? So
at this point in his career, based on his usage, it's safe to assume that Roslovic is a winger at the NHL level.
For
the time being. So
what I'm saying, Drew, is I don't think anybody should be surprised that these two lines were successful last night.
Well, I mean, they have a ton of talent. So anytime that talent is successful, you're right. You shouldn't necessarily be surprised. But
you've had players that have played together before.
Right.
So it's not like you're just kind of
do you think this is going to work?
We joke all the time about Paul Maurice and his line blender. But based on all the injuries the Jets have had, what other option does he have?
He could have gone back to Andrew Kopp up the middle, which he started the season with.
How much offense was that line producing?
And that's exactly what he talked about. He said that there was a lack of offense, that he goes, it was great that they had the puck, but you're not putting the puck in the back of the net. You need results. This is a results-driven business, obviously. So, and I think, to your point earlier, Drew, I think, or to Ezzy's point, I should say, that the idea of he was loath to split up Scheifele and Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we've been talking about it for a while, that it could be to the benefit of the whole team to do it, not just them individually. And now this gives him an excuse to do it. And I think, you know, now is an opportunity from his perspective to move Wheeler to the middle, get those two guys split up, get maybe them started. You know, and he was talking about, before the game began, about how playing center is going to give Blake Wheeler an opportunity to have more touches of the puck, and he'll, you know, get a little more engaged in the game. So I think from that perspective, he's just looking at a way to, you know, politically get his captain going and giving his captain an opportunity.
And Drew, you know, it's a good question that you raise because, I mean, it's been one game, right? So mm-hmm. you've got, as we talked about,
size.
I mean, no, but you know, there are some huge games coming up, and you know, we'll see how this line continues to progress, right? But mm-hmm. when you look at the options that Paul Maurice has, I mean, Connor Scheifele, Wheeler, guys, we've talked about it. Going back to last year, mm-hmm. they have struggled at 5-on-5. The first 20 to 30 games, they were the dominant line that they were 2 years ago when the Jets went to the Western Conference Final. But really, your options are you either elevate Ehlers to that line with Scheifele and Wheeler, a line that's had a lot of success. Mm-hmm. You keep Kopp as your second line center, or you do something but with splitting up Scheifele and Wheeler. And right. you can either split them up by having Wheeler on the second line. Scheifele is obviously always going to be your first line center. But I think what Maurice is doing here is very calculated and makes a lot of sense. You need to have, in the NHL nowadays, three good scoring lines. And you definitely need to have a line that drives the offense. And too many times this year, the Jets haven't had that. They haven't had a dominant first line. And that was something that they had on a consistent basis the year that they had 114 points. So I think the move makes a lot of sense, but I don't think it's going to be long-term.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets' decision to move Blake Wheeler from the wing to the number two center spot in Brian Little's absence.
I think Andrew Kopp, Drew, can be a second-line center. Like, I would like to see Paul Maurice go back to that, but I think when you have, as Dave mentioned, mixed results, you have a good game, a game that's not so good, like the Devils game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Andrew Kopp is capable of being a second-line center. But right now, like I said, the kind of words I was using were steadying the ship. You need to kind of not only steady the ship, you need to kind of get the ship going, right?
Let me ask you guys this. When Brian Little returns, and we don't know when that's going to be. Obviously, he suffered the terrible ear injury, head injury, you know, on the Nikolaj Ehlers slap shot in that game against New Jersey, and he's suffering from vertigo and things of that nature as a result of the blow to the head. When Brian Little returns, does he return as a center, or does he return on the wing?
Well, Paul Maurice has indicated in the past that his preference, especially specifically after Brian Little was out after the preseason, mm-hmm. the last preseason game against the Wild, yeah. and then when he got back in, someone asked, would you like to start Brian Little on the wing to make it a little bit easier for him? And Maurice said it's easier for him to play in the middle simply because of, you know, that's his familiar role. That's his familiar role, and rather than throwing him into an area where he's not familiar and the lines he's not as familiar with, the routes, I should say, you know, stick him back in the middle. So, I mean, Paul Maurice's tendency would be to put Brian Little back in the middle. Now, of course, to your point, and the big question mark, of course, is what we don't know, is how long is he going to be out for? If he's out for a long time and you're having a tremendous amount of success, well, then I guess you probably wouldn't want to, you know,
mess with success.
We know the way NHL coaches are. They're not likely to do something like that if you're having a winning recipe. You know, if you reel off... If Brian Little misses five games and you win all five games, you're not going to go back and change things right away. So to my view, you would have to adjust the situation. But, you know, if he comes back and they're having middling success, mm-hmm. you know, because remember, I mean, if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck last night, I don't know that game was necessarily...
The final score flatters the Jets because
right.
that's a 2-1 game. Mm-hmm. Until with Connor Hellebuyck making number of good saves, one off Bo Horvat,
the toe save
off Pettersson.
Yeah.
You know,
Jake Virtanen was point blank.
Breakaway yeah. for Virtanen. Yeah. You know, so, you know, Connor Hellebuyck really did keep the Jets.
But the truth is, Connor Hellebuyck, you know, it's funny sometimes we talk about goaltenders and we're like, oh, well, he's paid as a number one goaltender to do that. So,
absolutely.
I mean, now don't get me wrong.
He's a former Vezina finalist.
That's right. So we shouldn't really be surprised when Connor Hellebuyck is solid. It's more a function of whether the rest of the team is doing what they're paid to do.
A 4-1 score indicates that it's a dominant victory by the team when last night's game wasn't, by any stretch of the imagination, a dominant victory. It's a good win, and you get full marks for that win. Yeah. But
you've won 3 of 4.
Yeah, and you get full marks for that. But it's not that they are this. They don't appear. They being the Winnipeg Jets don't appear to be some sort of juggernaut. They're working their way through the struggles.
I don't think there's any juggernaut in the league right now.
Yeah, well, I would say there's two juggernauts right now in the NHL, and that would be the Washington Capitals and the New York Islanders.
Well, it's easy to say that right now, Drew.
Well, I mean, both teams are 9-0-1 in the last 10. So those are two teams that right
now. Was Buffalo a juggernaut when they won 10 in a row last year? Like, let's just calm down.
They were a juggernaut at that period. period of time, certainly. Well, they weren't a juggernaut for the entirety of the season.
I don't know, Drew. Buffalo lost 3 in a row.
No, he's talking about last year when they won 10 in a row.
The Islanders are a good team. I wouldn't call them the look up the definition of a juggernaut.
Well,
I think it's your picture, actually.
It's just him drinking beer
out
of the jug.
The Capitals are a great team, don't get me wrong, but what I'm saying is I don't think there's a Tampa Bay this year. They were a juggernaut last year.
Well, I'm saying in the here and the now, the Islanders
those are the
and
two
Capitals
best teams. Yeah, I mean, anybody can look at the standings and see those two teams
in
there.
In the snapshot of today, the 9th of November.
I would say Boston is probably.
Boston.
I would say Boston if you're talking about anybody who's.
Who picked them to win the cup?
One guy.
So when you're talking about, the Jets, I don't think it even matters anymore about whether Brian Little is going to play center or wing because, first off, I'm tired of talking about it. I can't do it, guys. We've been doing this radio show for too long. The fact is the Jets are 22nd in the league in goals for and 23rd in the league on their power play. So you have to find a right combination and a consistent top six that's producing offensively. So I realize, Drew, that has been the question now for 3 years, 4 years about Brian Little as the second line center. And if he is the second line center and that second line is producing, then that's fine.
When we come back, Murad Atash is going to join us from theathletic.com. We'll talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com here in Winnipeg, you know his great work covering the Winnipeg Jets. We're pleased to be joined by our good friend Murad Atash. Murad, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. Let's do this. Let's have some fun.
Exactly. Let's have some fun. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets and the big storyline entering last night's contest and last night's victory over the Vancouver Canucks was Blake Wheeler as the Winnipeg Jets second line center. When Paul Maurice, came out and made that announcement or became apparent during practice a couple days ago, what were your initial thoughts about the decision and how did you think Wheeler performed last night in that role?
Well, the precedent goes back to 2017-18 when Winnipeg was just rolling over teams. Mm-hmm. And Mark Scheifele's injury turned Brian Little into a number one center and Blake Wheeler into a number two center. That line was excellent. They outscored their opposition something like 12-6 over those 16 games. But there were some fortunate percentages. The finishing was a little bit otherworldly for that month or so. And Connor Hellebuck was otherworldly back then as well. And it was a whole different landscape for the Winnipeg Jets. So I was curious to what extent could Blake Wheeler sort of replicate those results? The other thing was that, even as a top line right winger, I think that Blake Wheeler has had a subpar start for his standards. And at times, Mark Scheifele was carrying the mail, but at times Blake Wheeler was the third best player on his line as a winger. And I was wondering, when is the dominant Blake Wheeler going to show up? And this struck me as maybe a unique challenge, even beyond the normal circumstances to make him a second line center. And then the results were great, in my opinion. I thought the speed was back. And right from practice the other day when he started, there was jump immediately in his game. And I like that about Blake Wheeler. And I like the speed that Ehlers and Roslovic brought as well. They had a strong night, in my opinion. No goals for or against, but in terms of what zone they were playing in, they did well. And I think Blake Wheeler, for a winger, is remarkably well-suited to the gig.
We got to stick with that second line. And I know, Murat, you want to talk about the new look power play units because, that was what the big news was leading up to this game, obviously, in addition to Blake Wheeler moving back to center, something that we talked about he did a couple of years ago. But, Roslovic looks to me like a much more motivated player, a faster player. He obviously gets rewarded yesterday with the Jets' first goal. But what have you seen from Roslovic over the last, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, there's another level of pace, I would say, even in Jack Roslovic's game. And he's always impressed me sort of with his willingness, especially when he plays wing, to track back, to put pressure on pucks, and then his speed up the ice as well. But it seems to me, and it was kind of funny because he was called out for it, and Paul Maurice has talked about his consistency there, but I think that this is a more consistent Jack Roslovic than we've seen prior to this point in his career. I had a pretty good conversation with him a couple of weeks back where he told me that that this wasn't how he thought he would break into the league. His imagination was that, you know, perhaps more of a top six offensive role right from the get-go, but he's been made to sort of claw his way up from fourth line and then to third line, and now this opportunity with the various injuries, he's, you know, playing with Nick Ehlers and Blake Wheeler, which is a really good group. I think that he has yet more levels to hit, and perhaps his ceiling will be a really effective top six winger because he does have that hustle and speed and the intelligence to play a two-way game as a winger at this point.
Murat, the Jets are sitting 22nd overall in power play percentage, and you know that was a big part of talk yesterday before the game. What was your thoughts of the composition? Patrick Laine, obviously not on that top unit, but they seemed to have a little bit of success yesterday. And what were your thoughts overall of the composition of the units?
Yeah, my hot take was any power play in the NHL with a shot like Patrick Laine's on the second unit is just a curious decision and perhaps not the most efficient way to run a power play. Then you sort of go through and you've got four lefties and a righty on the top unit with Mark Scheifele being the righty. I was curious as to who would take the draws because Scheifele struggled on the faceoff circle, but he was good last night because Andrew Kopp would have been an option as well. The thing that really impressed me, or I think that was clearly the theme of the day, was speed. And they talk about it all the time. NHL is a fast game. Paul Maurice prioritizes speed. There's a lot of fast players on the Jets. But if you look at the very first power play the Jets had, the moment they got possession of the puck, they were whipping the puck around the zone as fast as they could. And it led to nearly 2 minutes of possession inside the Canucks zone. A lot of good opportunities. Kyle Connor nearly put one away as well. So I think that, you know, whether this is the long-term look or not, if we just think about the moment and what Winnipeg really needed was some more creative and faster puck movement, and I think they delivered. They got the goal. It was the first game of the season that Winnipeg's special teams, their power play outscored what their penalty kill gave up, and that was significant and a huge part of the win. So short-term, it paid right off.
Murat Ateş is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Murat from his work covering the Winnipeg Jets for TheAthletic.com. Murat, it's taken a while, but the Jets are now finally healthy on the back end. They have eight healthy defensemen at the NHL level, and you know obviously Sami Niku is playing very well at the AHL level. If you had your choice, who would the Jets' top six defense be?
Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk are the absolute sure things for sure. I've been impressed with Tucker Pullman as well. Nathan Beaulieu would be the veteran of the group that I would prioritize as well. I'm so impressed with Sami Niku in the AHL, and you guys are all over that. And you know he's above a point per game, even in his NHL camp situation. The speed, the cutbacks, the way that he evaded forechecks and moved the puck up ice. I think that's something that the Winnipeg Jets need. And at his stage of his career, he's 23 years old. He's older than many of what his Winnipeg Jets teammates would be. I don't really see that the AHL is what he needs for his development. I think the next step comes from the NHL. And from there, there are a lot of good soldiers in Lucas Spezza, Carl Dahlstrom, Anthony Bitetto, for sure, and Dmitry Kulikov as well. He was part of a successful third pairing in 2017-18 with Tyler Myers. So of that group, you would need a veteran to step forward. And, you know, I thought Dmitry Kulikov has been a little bit outmatched in the top four so far. Last night was the second consecutive night. He was kind of puck watching on the game's opening goal. So I'm not sure who to pick for number six quite yet, but, I think my top five is Morrissey, Pionk, Beaulieu, Niku, and I think I'm just blanking on you. Pardon me. Thank you so much. How could I forget Tucker Pullman?
I shouldn't ask you that these difficult math questions this early in the morning. My apologies.
Kopp and Lowry aren't the only ones that have a bromance. We have a bromance going with you as well, Murat. So we're going to make sure that we make you look good. When you talk about, you know, the defense, we have to stick on the defense and mention Ville Heinola, right? Because that was the big news earlier this week that he was going to be going back to the Finnish league. Luko Roma is the team that he's going to play for. And obviously, we expect Heinola to be a part of that Finnish World Junior team, and he could even end up playing for Finland at the World Hockey Championship that comes up in the spring. But in your opinion, I know you've probably been asked about this a lot, but is this the right move for him at this stage in his development?
I think it's a good move. Certainly, I do. For me, the biggest concern is Ville Heinola playing meaningful minutes at a level that challenges him that he can have success at. And I think that that's sort of where I look for finding the dial. I think that the NHL challenged him and impressed all of us for sure. But long term, I think that this season is about big minutes in a level where he can have success. And I think the AHL would have worked for that. I think Finland would have worked for that as well. So I don't really nitpick between the two. One of the advantages to playing in Finland is that his club there is, I believe, ranked third in the league right now. And relative to the league, you can sort of expect that he would have some success. And as long as that level continues to be a meaningful challenge for him and he gets the minutes, I think that's great. Another consideration is that in addition to the World Juniors and World Championships, there's a Finnish national team program that plays three or four tournaments. We learned through Tommy Sapala the other day. So he's going to have an opportunity to play even more internationally than he might have had the Moose given him permission to play in the World Juniors, as even we would have expected him to do. So all to say, I think he's on a great path. The fact that he impressed us in the NHL already is found money, because his plan was always to go back to Finland. He was talking about Miro Heiskanen's path, and anything that he accomplishes this season is about big minutes and excelling at that level, coming back even more impressive a year from now.
You know, Murat, we have to ask about Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, you know, the big talk about in the preseason was, is he going to be able to get back to that form he showed when he was a Vezina candidate? What have you seen from him this season, and specifically down this stretch, as the Jets seem to be catching a little bit of fire?
I believe he's playing even better than we saw in 2017-18 when he was a Vezina candidate. This is an exceptional performance from Connor Hellebuyck. The first game, we all sort of chuckled and, oh my goodness, it didn't look great. And then he said he felt like he was playing well. And all of a sudden, look at what he's done. He's leading the NHL in goals saved above expectation. So if you factor shot quality and what Winnipeg gives up and how many saves he's made, he's given Winnipeg the best goaltending performance in the NHL so far. I sincerely believe a huge part of the record, the 9-7-1, comes down to Connor Hellebuyck. And last night was a good game from the Winnipeg Jets. They didn't absolutely depend on him like they have on some nights. Even then, there were some massive saves, including the one right before Kyle Connor's breakaway goal. When Andrew Kopp was pickpocketed, Winnipeg struggled to get out of their zone. There was an instant breakaway. Hellebuyck stayed in the fight. That glove save was absolutely phenomenal by my books. So even on a night when Winnipeg played well, he's still one of the drivers of that win.
Murat Ateş covers the Winnipeg Jets for TheAthletic.com. Murat, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for chatting. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Murat. When we come back, we discuss the Manitoba Moose result from last night as part of our TSN Radio scoreboard. And we, of course, look back at the week that was when it comes to Dustin Byfuglien's saga with the Winnipeg Jets. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We'll see what they can do with the man advantage this time. Spacek in and Zolt goes to the net. They score! CJ Cease and the Moose have a 3-0 lead on a gorgeous feed from Michael Spacek. Cease was just going right to the net.
Our buddy Daniel Fink with the call from last night in Rockford, Illinois. The Manitoba Moose posting a 4-0 shutout.
As they gave a shutout.
They probably gave a shutout too. Shout out to Mikael Burden for his first shutout of the season.
Please just don't say shootout, because the Jets Devils shootout was just awful.
Well, I mean, no,
just horrible.
The Jets Devils game, there should have been a money back guarantee attached to that game. Can you imagine paying paying full price for that game, and I'm sure that many in our audience did, and I apologize to you for having had to do so, but that was one of the worst hockey games. I mean, both teams should have just been embarrassed at the at their performance on Tuesday night in that game. That was just absolutely unwatchable. But Dave, the Moose, you obviously are the Moose insider, so the Moose with a victory last night in Rockford. Mm-hmm. They're on a 3-game road trip. They lost on Wednesday morning, mm-hmm. Yeah, in one of those school day games. In, where's that, Milwaukee?
Yep.
And then
Milwaukee.
And then tonight they're playing in Chicago against the Wolves.
Yeah. Who they play 12 times in this season.
12 times? Is this the first of 12?
No, they've already played them once.
They've already played them 17 times. So, yeah. So this is the second of 12 meetings between the Moose and the Wolves later on tonight. But last night's game, a good victory for the Moose in Rockford, playing better hockey now. I'm not saying it's the illegal curve bump, but we did have Pascal Vincent on last week, and they've been playing better hockey ever since then. They swept both games at home last weekend against Grand Rapids, and so they've now won 3 of their last 4.
Yeah, and you know, they were in the fight for the game in Milwaukee. They actually had a lead and gave up a number of goals in the second period to ultimately drop that game. But no, they've definitely been playing better. You know, they had Heinola for a little bit, Sami Niku. That was a real nice pairing. Jansen Harkins has really stepped up his game. I mean, he's got 1 goal, 9 assists in his last 4 games. He had 5 assists on 5 goals last Saturday. He's been unbelievable. Niku has 3 goals, 3 assists in the last 4 games. And Seth Griffith, who's been, at the AHL, is a very good scorer. He's got 6 goals and 2 assists. So, and Andrei Chibasov also deserves merit mention. He's found some good chemistry with Seth Griffith. So those two guys have started to produce. And again, the one thing that I thought the team has been lacking was Eric Comrie, because he is such a solid, he was a team MVP last year, and a lot of people were dismissive, oh, Burden can take it. It's like, guys, like, you need to chill out a little bit. This is Mikael Burden's second pro full pro season, and again, I have confidence in Mikael Burden, but I to have a tandem like Comrie Burden, I think would have served this team well. And having all the pressure on Mikael Burden, I thought was getting to him a little bit. I didn't think he was as clean as we've seen, as we came to expect last year. And a lot of the pucks have been hitting him and just not falling the way I expected him to handle rebounds. So it looks like maybe he's a little bit more into a groove, and that's a good thing. And the Moose look like they found something there. And they've got, it's interesting because this is a team that returned almost their full lineup from last year.
The Moose.
And that's very rare for the AHL. So I really expected them not necessarily to continue what they did from Christmas to almost the playoffs, which was go play unbelievable hockey for the remainder of the year. Mm-hmm. So I didn't expect them to continue, because that just doesn't happen in pro sports. But I thought that they'd have a little more chemistry to kind of start things off. And they struggled a little bit, but it looks like they've got things going again.
There's your Moose recap from last night as part of the TSN Radio scoreboard here on TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You mentioned Eric Comrie, and I just want to touch on that. He's sort of in the equivalent of hockey purgatory right now. Hasn't played a game for the Arizona Coyotes. Mm-hmm. And he's on their roster as their third goalie. It seems like they're terrified that they might lose him.
Well, he'll never clear waivers.
So they're holding 3 goaltenders up on their roster, which is relatively unheard of in this day and age in the NHL.
They actually did that last year.
Yeah.
It was with Pickard, was it not?
Yeah, Arizona's done it before.
Yeah, it's odd, though. You don't see it very often.
No, it's extraordinary. I think the Islanders did it as well. Because remember, they had they had one of their prospects up, and they would lose him otherwise. So I believe the Islanders did it either last year or the year before. I remember looking at it, thinking it's very, because it is unusual.
Yeah.
Because again, it's unusual for 2 reasons. One, because it gives you 1 less either forward or defenseman to call upon, which is more likely where you're going to need help. And 2, that goaltender is not getting any. Yeah. Reps. They're practicing.
He's stagnating.
But what benefit? And think about it. Eric Comrie's last game, I think, was September 26th, was an exhibition game for the Jets.
Yeah.
He got picked up on waivers on October 1st. It's November 9th. He has not played a hockey game. Like that's pretty crazy.
That's detrimental to his development.
True, it was Calvin Pickard. You remember Antti Raanta had that long term injury, and then obviously Darcy Kemper played the majority of the games. I think he was around 50 games last year, and it was Calvin Pickard who was the third goalie, so he was backing up Kemper. And I think they had 5 or 6 goalies last year. They also had
Hill.
Yeah, Aiden Hill. Hunter Miska played a game. So I mean, the Coyotes' goaltending was a revolving door last year. So the Coyotes have been one of the teams that keep 3 goalies, but I agree with you. I mean, Eric Comrie, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I think the Jets would probably like to get him back.
Well, we've talked about it, that if he was to go through waivers, the Jets, you'd have to think, would want to get him back into the organization simply because to add to the depth of the Moose. I mean, the Jets are one goaltending injury away from Mikael Burden being at the NHL level.
Well, and that was my point when people were like, it's not a big deal that you've lost him. I said it's a pretty big deal, because if you lose one of your two goaltenders, you don't want a guy who's in his second year of pro. Don't get me wrong. Again, I think Mikael Burden has a tremendous amount of upside. I just think you don't want him in a second year pro to be a guy who's expected to do something at the NHL level, especially with the pressure the Jets goaltenders are currently under.
I think Burden is probably the most intriguing prospect the Jets have. I mean, and obviously Heinola and David Gustafson, if you want to still call him a prospect, but it's
Christian
obviously
Vesalainen.
Well, Vesalainen, but Burden is kind of a forgotten guy, and I know Dave has covered the Moose and Burden more than anybody, so he knows the ins and outs of his game more. We know about his puck handling ability, but I mean, this is a guy, you talk about the shutout yesterday. He had a couple of shutouts last year, and his numbers were good when it comes to save percentage with the Moose in a backup role. So I agree, you don't want to see him in the backup role at the NHL level long term, but the point is, at a certain point, you kind of do know what you want to see, and you do want to get him into some games. Probably not that many this year.
Let me ask you this,
but
though,
next year you probably do want to see him get into a couple NHL games.
Burden is such a unique goaltender. Mm-hmm. You watch him game in, game out more than anyone in the city, and there's no.
Didn't I just say that?
I know, but there's no goaltender quite like him in the manner in which he plays the puck, and the manner in which he's almost like a roving goaltender / defenseman. Yeah. At the NHL level, if he gets to the NHL level, do you think coaches will let him still be Mikael Burden that you see today, or will they try and stifle that creativity?
And we've talked to Moose head coach Pascal Vincent about that, and he says, like, look, you've got to stay within a structure, but we can't change how you got to us. So we've got to allow you to kind of be you. Now, it's ironic because NHL teams, well, hockey teams in general, are generally about conformity.
That's right. They hate creativity.
So it'll be an interesting mix. But I think, like, what got you to that point? Now, I asked this question on Twitter the other day. I said, I wonder if there's a way to quantify how much energy a goaltender uses in a game, because I would suspect that Mikael Burden uses probably double, if not triple, whatever that average is, because he is so
active.
And again, I don't know how that would translate at the NHL level. Eventually, as he's pointing, I think it's a good one. I think we will see that.
I don't think you want to stifle him. Like, I don't think, obviously, you want to rein it in, but I don't think you want it to have a goalie that can play the puck like that. Who's the guy that comes to mind, active NHLer, that's good at handling the puck? A goalie.
Ben Bishop?
Mike Smith,
okay.
I mean, Mike Smith is really effective at handling the puck. And if you ask, I mean, obviously he's on the Oilers now, but you ask when he was on the Flames or the Coyotes previously, they'll say it's like having an extra defenseman back
right
there.
Right, but Mikael Burden is even more active than Mike Smith would be.
And I think Ezzie's point is a good one. I think what they would do is say, listen, we don't want you running out to the blue line.
Yeah.
We don't want you going out to the corners. But, to play the puck, to get the puck to the defenseman, and you know what? And
Bishop, by the way, is good at playing the puck as well.
And it's interesting because I actually said this about Connor Hellebuck. I think actually Connor Hellebuck is, his puck handling this year versus last is like night and day.
It's improved.
It's drastic. It is drastic. Like when you watch Connor Hellebuck, he didn't play the puck a lot last year. And when he did, now he's actually literally passing it out. So to me,
Last year when he played the puck, you held your breath. It's like, oh God, this is going to be a turnover.
To me, this is an element of his game that he's, I don't know if it was something he found over the summer, but it's definitely an improvement in his game, I think, across the board, we were seeing improvement in his game. But I think that's an element of his game that he's added for sure.
No question about it. Anyways, we will see. There's your Manitoba Moose. The Moose actually in action later on tonight in Chicago, as we mentioned, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Sean Tierney. We'll talk to Sean about the Jets' underlying numbers and how they look from an analytical point of view. Always a great conversation with Sean. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ChartingHockey.com, we're pleased to welcome, pardon me, ChartingHockey.ca, apologies, Sean. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend, Sean Tierney. Sean, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me back on.
Our pleasure, Sean. Always love to talk to you about the Winnipeg Jets. Certainly from a bit of an analytical point of view, you do such a great job of breaking it down and making it out in sort of simple terms. You know, so as we sit here, and Winnipeg Jets fans sit here through 17 games, a team record of 9-7-1, when you look at their win-loss record, and then you look at their performance from the analytical point of view, would you say the Jets are exceeding their performance based in the standings, or are they right where they should be given their performance so far?
They're definitely overperforming what we would expect based on some of the sort of key indicators we looked at in the advanced stats. One place that you start is with shot rates, and that gives us a good sense of whether or not a team is controlling the flow of play, if they've got puck possession, or if they're chasing the puck around more often than not. With the Jets right now, we have them as a team allowing more shots against than league average. They're kind of hanging around the Detroit Red Wings, Minnesota Wild, Columbus Blue Jackets, a few teams like that, giving up about 56 shot attempts at even strength per 60 minutes. So it's just a bit above average. But they're generating below league average in shot rate four, again, hanging around with sort of Minnesota Wild, Columbus Blue Jackets. They're just under 54 shot attempts per 60, and league average is about 55. So when you see those indicators right off the bat, you know that the Jets are kind of trailing the play more often than they're controlling the play. And in general, that leads to negative goal differentials going forward, and it should lead to a losing record if you keep that kind of thing up over the course of a year. If we look at shot rates, but then weight it by the quality of those chances, the expected goals, where you're still looking at the shots, but you count the ones in the crease as more than the point shots, for example, it gets even worse. The only teams that have been as bad by expected goal share are the San Jose Sharks and maybe sort of Chicago Blackhawks, New York Rangers, kind of that territory. So it paints kind of a picture of a team that's definitely overperforming what we'd expect based on the control of play that they've had so far.
You know, Sean, just sticking with that, you know, we talk about, you know, shot share and expected goals, and you just posted the graph. You call it XG, which means expected goal share rates, and you mentioned that the Jets are, I think it's minus 0.7 right now with the Sharks, as you mentioned, and the Rangers, bottom of the league. Which stat to you is more indicative of the quality, I guess, of a team right now? Because we know that the Jets right now have been struggling defensively. Their special teams have not been good either, but for you, is this a team with all the firepower that they have? Is this not a team that should be getting more results?
Absolutely. I find it, especially knowing the character of this team and what they've been able to do over the past season or two, it's a lineup that isn't short on top-end offensive talent. You know, the top six, when you've got Scheifele, Laine, Ehlers, even Wheeler, even though his performance has been a little bit uneven to get started, Kyle Connor, when you start reaming off some of those names, it's the kind of team that should really be pushing the pace and should be getting into dangerous areas to score. And a lot of players that have a history of being able to generate that kind of quality. But, you know, when you compare them league-wide right now at even strength, it's only the St. Louis Blues and San Jose Sharks that are generating as little quality, that XG number four. And that's just not the company you want to be in. You don't want to be, you know, bottom three teams in the NHL in terms of the quality when you know you're a team that has a lot of high-powered offensive options to run with. So I'm not sure if that's coming down to systems or what exactly is going on with the team there. But right now it's a team that's really grinding it out as if they don't have top-end offensive players, but they really, really do. And I think if this team wants to stay, you know, above 500 or stay in the playoff hunt as the year goes on, they have to dial up the pace, and they really need to look to get those sort of dangerous net front chances again, because right now they're just really not doing it, and it will sink them in the long run if they stay like this.
Well, Sean, then a lot of what you're suggesting would, to me, would point to a goaltender who's as hot as Connor Hellebuyck has been, and we know his goal saved above average is right around the top of the league. So what have you seen from Connor Hellebuyck this season, and is obviously he the difference for this Winnipeg Jets team based on what you've seen so far?
Absolutely. If you're pointing to a reason why this team has the record they do, it's Connor Hellebuyck. And I think, you know, if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, it's a really encouraging sign. Goals saved above expectation, which you referenced, that's kind of the first place we go to see what kind of workload is a goalie facing, and then how are they performing relative to that workload. We know based on what the Jets are allowing right now, Hellebuyck's workload has been really tough. They're allowing a ton of expected goals against, one of the worst teams in the league in terms of what they're allowing. And last year, Hellebuck's results were really middle of the road, sometimes even negative, where he was giving up more than we would expect. And so it's kind of a strange season for him last year. This year, he's number one in the league. Right now, as of this morning, we have him at almost 9 goals saved above expectation. The next highest is Carey Price, another bounce back this year, and he's at about 5. So that kind of paints a picture of, just how far beyond in this small sample Connor Hellebuck has performed, and it's really been the difference maker. My only concern is, goalie stats can be a little bit finicky. We got a small sample here. We know that Hellebuck has the potential to be something like an average goalie sometimes too. And so if the Jets are going to lean on him in this way and keep exposing him to such a heavy workload, I would expect this number to come back to the pack over the course of the year. And so, if the Jets aren't limiting the quality in front of them, they're going to burn this guy out. So a really hot start, and it's really encouraging to see that he's done this, but it's not something I'd want to bank on for another 60 games.
Sean Tierney is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets from an analytical point of view. You can follow Sean's work online at chartinghockey.ca. He's also a great follow on Twitter at chartinghockey. Sean, you talked about Connor Hellebuck, and you talked about his impressive performance, and even though he's getting peppered with shots and having to play really above his head, given that the Jets are playing this very sort of dull style where they're playing a very defensive style, yet they're not playing it very well, shouldn't the team, given its offensive firepower, maybe try and loosen things up and try and outperform their poor defensive play on the offensive side of the game?
Absolutely. The best research that we have on this topic is when you know that your team is a skilled team, and again, the Jets, you can go through 5 or 6 players where you know these are top options offensively. And when you have that kind of skill, you really want to take the variance or the luck out of it. And the best way to do that is to go fast and to generate as much quality as you can. Even if that means that maybe you're exposing yourself to a little bit of extra danger going the other way. And right now, Hellebuck's playing a style or playing in a way that makes you feel like even if he is getting some extra chances against, which he is, he can probably bail you out on the odd time where it gets really ugly. But when you have top offensive options, the best thing to do is let them go for a run and really sort of try to expose the other team by showing the kind of depth that you have offensively. But when you go as slow as the Jets have been going, you kind of welcome other teams to get that lucky bounce or to have that shot that Hellebuck should have had that one time or whatever it is. And you invite that variation into the game. That's what a low-skill team should do when you know that you can't outgun the opposition. But the Jets aren't that kind of a team. So I question the system. I question the speed of play right now. And the results haven't totally sunk the team. But if they stay like this, we can expect that their results are going to regress a little bit. And it's not a style I would recommend for a team as talented as this one is.
Sean, we want to ask you about Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and I remember last time that we had you on, that was last regular season, we asked you about the idea of splitting up Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and I know that that's something that's talked about a lot here in Winnipeg, and obviously Paul Maurice has split the two up, but it's not necessarily what we expected to see with Blake Wheeler playing at center, and the results spoke for themselves last night with the win over the Canucks, with Mark Scheifele getting the goal and Blake Wheeler looking pretty good on that second line with Ehlers and Roslovic, but from a 5-on-5 production point of view, this is a couple of players that have struggled 5-on-5. They've done most of their damage on the power play. But in your opinion, to get these two lines going at 5-on-5 offensively, is this the right decision by Paul Maurice?
Yeah. So we have good research again that shows when you have top players, they can usually carry a line all on their own. And so you really do your opponents a favor if you put a Wheeler and a Scheifele, if you put them together. Because now the opposition knows, get your top defensive pair out there, hard match as much as you can, and you can eliminate that one option. But top offensive players in the NHL are able to elevate their wingers or elevate their other two line mates and carry a line on their own by and large, especially when you're talking about players of Scheifele's caliber and Wheeler's too. And so the best thing you can do is try to expose your opponent by making matchups difficult, by taking Scheifele and giving him his own line and taking Wheeler and putting him somewhere else too. And then you just count on the fact that over the course of a game, you're going to get those favorable matchups where they can sort of do their damage. When Scheifele and Wheeler were together with Ehlers, I have them as the most fun, in quotation marks, line combination in the NHL so far this year. which means they were generating a ton of quality for, but they were giving up more quality against than any other line in hockey. So it really just wasn't a sustainable way for the team to play. When we have other sorts of line combinations going on with Wheeler and Scheifele separated, these are sort of new things, but it gives the lineup a chance to expose their opponent's depth on defense. Ultimately, it's the best way to construct the lineup. So, you know, hopefully that's the way the Jets continue to roll.
You know, Sean, we've been looking at Patrick Laine's season, and by his standards, which is always goal scoring, it's not going as well as he'd like. And, you know, his shooting percentage, his best one ever was 18.3%. Right now he's at about a 5.8% shooting percentage, which, of course, with Patrick Laine, we know is likely going to increase over the course of the season. But what have you seen from Patrick Laine so far this season, and what should give Jets fans some encouragement as to expectations for him to get that goal scoring under control?
Yeah, when you're talking about a player like Laine, you know that a shooting percentage like that's not going to stay. League average for teams anyways, and then for players, winds up being in the 8.5 range. And when you're talking about an elite shooter like this, it won't be surprising to see him regress positively to something like 9 or 10%. So those goals are going to come. You just hope that he's creating the chances that he can convert. And so far, that's been the case. I think, you know, if fans are looking for something really encouraging about Laine so far, the sort of one number catch-all stat that we like, the talking point is WAR, or wins above replacement. And that just takes all the contributions the player's making on offense, defensively, power plays, drawing penalties, all of the things that we know really matter, and you can distill it into one number. And when you look at the Winnipeg Jets so far this season, Patrick Laine leads the team in WAR so far, which is really interesting because Laine struggled heavily last year, ultimately wound up, I believe, as a negative overall player because of some of the deficiencies that were going on in his game. Right now, he's the top for the team, which is just super encouraging. So even if the goals aren't there yet, we know he's creating the offensive opportunities. And when you have an elite talent like Laine over the course of a season, the conversion will come. The goals are going to come. And so you just hope that he keeps playing the way that he is and trust that the talent that he has is going to play out as the season goes on.
Sean, just a couple more questions for you. Dave had something up on our site, illegalcurve.com, about Nikolaj Ehlers and the amount of heavy lifting he's doing offensively. And I know that you've seen these stats. And, you know, at the time that was back on, I think it was either Halloween or November 1st, 32% of the offensive responsibility was on Nikolaj Ehlers. And you had players in that group. At the top of the list was Leon Draisaitl, David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand. I mean, when you look at Ehlers and all the skill, we know that he's got the speed and all that, but does he get enough credit for being a play driver?
Definitely not. And he's a name who seemed to be coming up in trade rumors through the summer and even last season. And it's a player that, you know, from an analytical point of view, really does a lot of the things that are positive. And to see his name floated as maybe somebody that you move out to try to address other team needs, you definitely create a bigger hole without Ehlers than you can ever fill with what you'd get in return, most likely. Mm-hmm. When we look at the play that he's had so far this year, it's only Scheifele who seems to be driving play better than Ehlers on the team. Again, you know, sort of team-wide, there are issues. But Scheifele right now, he plots as kind of a fun player in that a lot of quality against when he's on the ice. But for Scheifele, he's driving the highest rate of quality for. He's above league average. So, you know, kind of what you're hoping an offensive player can do. Ehlers is second. And so the two, those two players are definitely driving the offensive load for the team in terms of getting quality. They're well above their teammates in the rate that they're creating. They're allowing too much against, but that's a team-wide issue. So, yeah, I think Ehlers is the kind of person who, for whatever reason, doesn't always get painted as the kind of really impactful and positive offensive player he is, but he definitely is. And, you know, I'm glad that the Jets didn't make a mistake by, you know, using him as a piece to move elsewhere. He's the kind of person they should be building around and ultimately could be that person, you know, with his own line, maybe a third line with Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers as the centerpieces on three lines. With an offense like that, there's almost no team in the NHL that would be able to go that deep and prevent them from getting their opportunities to score.
Last question for you, Sean. Sean Tierney of ChartingHockey.ca is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. We spend a lot of time talking about the forwards on the Jets and a lot of time talking about Connor Hellebuck. When you look at this Jets defense, it's now finally healthy. They have 8 healthy defensemen at the NHL level. They have Sammy Niku at the AHL level sort of banging on that door. from your perspective, you know, what do the Jets need to do with their defense in order to maximize their effectiveness? You talked about war earlier. We know that they were playing a lot of defensemen when they were in the midst of those injuries that really don't provide a lot when it comes to wins above replacement. So from your perspective, what do the Jets need to do with their defense to maximize their effectiveness?
Yeah, I mean, this was the big concern coming into the year, knowing the issues with Bufflin and moving on from Trouba. It was going to be a defensive group that was going to likely be the issue on the team. The results have been not as bad as I might have predicted going into the year, oddly. It's such a strange collection of players. Morrissey is kind of the presumptive, maybe, you know, anchor of this blue line. His results have been pretty mixed. He's just sort of all the value that he creates in terms of his abilities on the power play or offensively, he's sort of negated with some fairly negative work defensively so far. He winds up as kind of a break-even defender. I'm not sure that I expect that over the course of a year for a player as talented as he is, but it's been a really uneven start. Betetto is somebody whose advanced metrics in the past have been super, super negative, and he's been, by these metrics anyways, the most positively impactful defenseman so far for the team. Visa's been okay, which again is a major surprise. Pionk has been just slightly positive. Again, he's coming off of a season where he was quite a negative contributor. And so, you know, I think that the blue line was going to be the concern for this team, and that's not a big surprise. The fact that they're getting at all reasonable contributions from some of the bottom end of this defense group is really encouraging, because ultimately Morrissey is going to be a player who comes around and can anchor this blue line probably. And so if they're getting even just break even or slightly positive work from some of the depth guys, maybe this big issue for the team winds up being just a small issue instead. And ultimately, you know, in a landscape without Bufflin and Trouba, that's a win.
Sean Tierney covers the NHL with his own website, chartinghockey.ca. He's a great follow online and, of course, on Twitter. Sean, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Sean. When we come back, we discuss who is the heart and soul of this Winnipeg Jets team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In Winnipeg, it's actually a tough question because that is to be determined. I think if you look at the last number of years with the Jets, Blake Wheeler would be that guy that you'd say is the heartbeat of the team. The Jets went as he did, but this year, to me, they don't have that same juice, as Wheeler has really tried to take a different approach to his leadership tact, and so they're still searching, and that's to be determined.
TSN senior hockey reporter Frank Zaravelli talking about who the Winnipeg Jets' heart and soul, who their leader is so far this season, or in his perspective, the Jets looking for that heart and soul, still looking for that leader. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Still to come in a few minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Dallas Stars General Manager Jim Neal to talk about the Jets' opponent tomorrow afternoon at Bell MTS Place. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So, gentlemen, do you agree with Frank Zaravelli there that the Jets right now are still looking for their heart and soul because Blake Wheeler is taking a bit of a different approach and a different tact with his leadership this season?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, the leadership group of this team, and that includes Mark Scheifele and Josh Morrissey, I mean, these are the heart and soul players. I mean, I would also throw in guys like Andrew Kopp. I would throw in Adam Lowry. I mean, even Connor Hellebuck. I mean, you remember back when Roberto Luongo was named the captain and everybody laughed about it. And obviously, it was not something that we'd ever seen before, right? But, I mean, these are the players that not only are the best players on the team, Drew, mm-hmm. but these are the players that set the tone in the dressing room. They set the tone in practice. So I think it's easy to look at Wheeler this year, right, and see that he's struggling on the power play. Not only is he struggling, he's really struggling, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, so what, he got his first power play point of the year last night.
Right, mm-hmm. and that to me is really mind-boggling.
Sure.
Because last year, the Jets' power play, that was a juggernaut. You know, speaking of juggernauts, I mean, the Jets' power play, you almost expected them to score 50 or 60% of the time, right? Obviously, they didn't. They weren't far off. But No, I mean, Wheeler still is a guy that can put the team on his back. And, you know, we talked about it last hour. Everything that the Jets have gone through early on this year, it's actually kind of miraculous that they're above 500, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the defense is just a revolving door. It's like musical chairs on defense, and it's stable now. As Drew mentioned, I mean, the Jets are healthy now, finally. And
on the back end, yeah.
Right, and you're going to get Sammy Nikku eventually. We talked about it. We expect Sammy Nikku to get recalled, you know, in the next, let's say, couple weeks, right, or month at least, right? Might not happen, but I expect that to happen because he's that talented. He can be in the NHL. So back to your question, I don't think that there's a leadership void. I don't think they're searching for their heart and soul, with the exception of a few players. Yes, you lost some very key players. The guy that is definitely the elephant in the room is Byfuglien, because Byfuglien was a heart and soul player.
Sure.
And that's something that I think, you know, it's not something that's quantifiable, right? I mean, like, Buff is a great offensive defenseman. He's a guy that we know can impact the game with his physicality. But this is a guy, Dave, that we know kept the room light, right? Like, he had a different leadership style. You talk about different leadership styles. Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, and Dustin Byfuglien are very different. Mark Scheifele, I would say, is probably more like Blake Wheeler, but Buff's the type of guy, you know, we've seen him over the years, the way he is on the ice, the way he is off the ice. I think they do miss him in the room.
Yeah, and I think that to your point, as I agree with you, I don't necessarily agree with Frank that there's a heart and soul lacking player. Maybe they have too much heart and soul, if you want to say it. But I mean, I don't know. I kind of read it and I thought to myself, I mean, there's numerous guys you could pick, and you could say Blake Wheeler's having a down season, but that doesn't remove what he is to this team, and this team is Blake Wheeler's team, and until he's no longer the captain, then that won't change. So to me, Blake Wheeler still is the heartbeat of this team. He's still the guy who runs this ship. So to me, you might not think his play on the ice is showing that, but as to whether he's that leader in the room and on the ice and in the community, it's still going to be Blake Wheeler.
When we come back, Dallas Stars general manager Jim Nill is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.